Coram lifted his jeweled eye patch and looked beyond Prince Gaynor and his men into the Netherworld cavern where his last victims were. Here were the Chaos Pack, all the more distorted since the Garn had taken them into the folds of its crushing wings. Here was Poli Bav, the pack's horse-faced leader. Into the Netherworld reached the Hand of Queel and summoned the Chaos Pack to Coram's aid.
Now Chaos shall war once more with Chaos. Take your prizes, Poli Bav, and be released from Limbo.
And foulness met foulness, and horror clashed with horror as the Chaos Pack rushed into Gaynor's camp and began to set upon their brother beasts. Dog thing fought cow thing, horse thing fought frog thing, and their bludgeons and their carvers and their axes rose and fell in a frightful massing. Prince Gaynor the Damned turned his horse so that it faced Coram. Coram readied his spear and lifted himself in his stirrups so that he was now seated on the high part of his saddle, almost standing upright.
I congratulate you, Prince in the Scarlet Robe. I see you did not rely upon my chivalry. Now, will both of you fight me?
Not that. My friend is here to report the outcome of this fight should I perish. He will only fight to protect himself.
A fair tourney, eh? Very well.
And Prince Gaynor, too, pushed himself into the fighting position in his saddle. Coram raised his spear to strike, shield up to protect his face, for he lacked Gaynor's visor. Prince Gaynor's flashing armor half-blinded Coram as he galloped on. Then he flung back his arm and hurled the great spear with all his might at Gaynor's head. It struck full against the helm, but did not pierce, did not appear to dent it. However, Gaynor reeled in his saddle and did not immediately retaliate with his own spear, giving Coram time to stretch out his hand and catch the haft of his weapon as it bounced back. Gaynor jabbed at Coram's face, but the Prince in the Scarlet Robe brought up his warboard to block the blow. Now both horses reared at once, hooves tangling and almost throwing off their riders. Coram flung his spear as he clung to the reins. Again it struck the Prince of the Damned, who was hurled backwards from his saddle and lay in the filthy mud of his camp. He sprang up at once, his spear still in his hand, and returned Coram's cast. The spear pierced the warboard, and its point came a fraction of an inch to entering Coram's jeweled eye. The spear hanging in his shield, he drew his sword and charged his horse down upon Prince Gaynor. Now Gaynor's broadsword was in his right hand, his shield raised to take Coram's first blow. Gaynor's stroke was not at Coram, but at the horse. He hacked off one of its feet, and it collapsed to the ground, throwing Coram sprawling to the mud. Prince Gaynor raised his sword and ran at Coram, as Coram desperately tried to regain his footing in the mud. The sword came down and was met by the shield. The blade bit through the layers of leather, metal, and wood, but it was stopped by the metal of Gaynor's own spear, which was still protruding from Coram's warboard. Coram swiped at Gaynor's feet, but the Prince of the Damned leapt high and escaped the blow, while Coram rolled back and at last managed to climb to a standing position, his shield all split and near useless.
You fight well, Coram, but you are mortal, and I no longer am.
Elsewhere, the grisly fight between the two parties of beastmen went on. The Chaos Pack was smaller than Gaynor's force, but it had the advantage that it had already been slain once, and therefore could not be slain again. The sounds of battle had alerted the rest of the camp, but the barbarians were unsure of what was happening. They were used to obeying Lir, who had come to rely upon Gaynor's commands, and now Gaynor had no time to tell Lir what to do. The two champions began to circle each other, while to one side of them, the beastmen of Chaos continued to fight to the death. In the shadows beyond the firelight, the faces of superstitious, wide-eyed barbarians watched the fray, not understanding how this thing had come about. Coram flung his shield to the ground and unslung his war axe from his back, holding it in the six-fingered Hand of Queel. He increased the distance between himself and his enemy, adjusting his grip on the axe. It was a perfectly balanced throwing axe, normally used by Varrak infantry in the old days when they had battled the Nadrach. Coram hoped that Prince Gaynor would not realize what he intended to do. Swiftly, he raised his arm and flung the axe. It flashed through the air towards the Prince of the Damned and was caught upon the shield. But Gaynor staggered back under the force of the blow, his shield completely split in twain. He threw aside the pieces, took his broadsword in both hands, and closed with Coram. Coram was forced back by the ferocity of Gaynor's attack. He jumped to one side and aimed a darting thrust at one of the joins in Gaynor's armor. Gaynor turned the thrust aside.
Immortal you may be, Prince Gaynor the Damned, but tireless you are not.
You cannot slay me. Do you not think I would welcome death?
Then surrender to me. Surrender to me and see if I cannot kill you.
To surrender would be to betray my pledge to Queen Sjomborg.
So, you do know honor.
Honor? Not honor. Fear, as I told you. If I betray her, Sjomborg will punish me. I do not think you could comprehend what that means, Prince in the Scarlet Robe!
And again, Prince Gaynor rushed upon Coram. Coram ducked under the whirling broadsword and came in with a swipe to Gaynor's leg so powerful that one knee buckled for an instant before the Prince of the Damned hopped backward, darting a glance over his shoulder to see how his minions fared. The Chaos Pack was finishing them. One by one, the creatures Coram had summoned from the Netherworld were gathering in their prizes and vanishing to whence they had come. Gaynor threw himself once more on Coram. Coram summoned all his strength to turn the lunge and thrust back. Then Gaynor closed in, grabbing Coram's sword arm and raising his broadsword to bring it down on Coram's head. Coram wrestled himself free, and the blade struck his shoulder, cut through the first layer of mail, and was stopped by the second. And he was defenseless. Prince Gaynor had clung to his sword and now held it triumphantly in his left gauntlet.
Yield to me, Prince Coram. Yield to me and I will spare your life.
So that you can take me back to your mistress, Sjomborg.
It is what I must do.
Then I will not yield!
So, I must kill you then?
Gaynor dropped Coram's sword to the mud, took a grip with both hands on the hilt of his own broadsword, and stumbled forward to finish his foe. Instinctively, Coram flung up his hands to ward off Gaynor's blow, and then something happened to the hand of Queel. More than once the hand had saved his life, often in anticipation of the threat, and now it acted of its own volition again to reach out and grasp Gaynor's blade, wrenching it from the hands of the damned prince, to dash the pommel against the top of Gaynor's head. Prince Gaynor staggered and slowly fell to his knees. Now Coram jumped forward and with one arm encircled Gaynor's neck.
Do you yield, prince?
I cannot yield. I have nothing to yield.
But he no longer struggled as the sinister hand of Queel grasped the lip of his visor and tugged. Prince Gaynor suddenly realized what Coram planned.
No! You cannot! No mortal may see my face!
He began to writhe, but Coram held him firmly, and the hand of Queel tugged again at the visor.
Please! I beg thee, Prince in the Scarlet Robe! Let me go and I will offer thee no further harm.
You have not the right to swear such an oath. You are Sjomborg's thing and are without honor or will.
Have mercy, Prince Coram.
And I have not the right to grant you that mercy, for I serve Arkin.
The hand of Queel wrenched for a third time at the visor. Coram stared at a youthful face, which writhed as if composed of a million white worms. Dead red eyes peered from the face, and all the horrors Coram had ever witnessed could not compare with the simple, tragic horror of that visage. The flesh of Prince Gaynor's face began to putrefy and change into a score of foul colors, which gave off a more pungent stench than anything which had issued from the Chaos Pack itself. And as Coram watched, the face changed its features. Sometimes it was the face of a middle-aged man, sometimes the face of a woman, sometimes that of a boy. And once, fleetingly, he recognized his own face.
How many guises have you known throughout all the eternity of your damnation?
Coram saw a million years of despair recorded there. And still the face writhed. Still the red eyes blazed in terror and agony. Still the features changed and changed and changed and changed. More than a million years. Eons of misery. The price of Gaynor's nameless crime, his betrayal of his oath to law. A fate imposed upon him not by law, but by the power of the balance.
What crime could you have committed if the cosmic balance was required to act?
Some suggestion of it appeared and disappeared in the various features that flashed within the helm. And now Coram did not grip Gaynor's neck, but instead cradled the tormented head in his arms. The Prince of the Damned had paid a price, was paying a price, which no being should ever have to pay.
Here is the ultimate injustice, or the ultimate in injustice. Both seem at this moment to be the same.
And even now, the Prince of the Damned was not dying. He was merely undergoing a transition from one existence to another. Soon, in some other distant realm, far from the 15 planes and the realms of the sword rulers, he would be doomed to continue his servitude to chaos. At last, the face disappeared, and the flashing armor was empty. Prince Gaynor the Damned was gone.
Coram!
Coram lifted his head dazedly.
Quickly, Coram, take Gaynor's horse. The barbarians are gathering their courage. Our work is done here.
Coram retrieved his sword from where Gaynor had dropped it in the mud. Let Jari help him into the ebony and ivory saddle. And then Jari Akonal and Coram Jailan Irse were headed towards the walls of Holweeg Nonvaka, with the Mabdan warriors furious behind them. Even a mile later, the barbarians still pursued, though their band was drunken and confused by what they had witnessed that evening. So Coram and Jari were able to maintain their lead all the way to Holweeg. The gates opened for them and closed instantly. Barbarian fists beat uselessly on the iron-shod timbers as Coram and Jari dismounted to find that King Onald and Ralina were waiting for them.
Prince Gaynor, does he still live?
Aye, he still lives.
Then you failed.
No.
Coram walked away from them, leading his foe's horse, walking into the darkness.
Coram? Coram?
But he was unwilling to speak to anyone, not even Ralina.
He did not fail? What does he mean, Jari?
Prince Gaynor's power is gone. Coram defeated him. Now the barbarians have no brain. They only have their numbers, their brutality, their dogs, and their bears. That is all, King Onald.
Then I will prepare us for their attack. They will come at us in the morning, I think.
And at dawn, the barbarian army of King Lyra Broda joined the army of Broan Mabdan, and still with the strength of the army of the dog and the army of the bear, began to close in on Holweeg Nonvaka. Warriors were packed on all Holweeg's low walls. The barbarians had no siege engines with them, since they had relied on Prince Gaynor's strategy and his host of chaos beasts in their taking of all other cities. But there were many of them, so many that it was almost impossible to see the last ranks of their legions. They rode on horses and in chariots, or they marched. Coram had rested for a few hours, but had not been able to sleep. He could not rid himself of the vision of Prince Gaynor's face. He tried to remember his hatred of Glandith Akrai, and sought the Earl amongst the barbarian horde. But Glandith was apparently nowhere present.
Perhaps Glandith searches for me still in the region of Moidal's Mount.
Outside the city walls, King Lear sat on a big horse and clutched his own crude battle banner. Beside him was the humpbacked shape of King Cronachin Adroc, ruler of the tribes of Broan Mabden. Half-idiot was King Cronachin, and well, he was nicknamed the Little Toad. The barbarians marched raggedly, without much order, and it seemed that the sunken-featured king looked about him nervously, as if he were not sure he could control such a force now that Prince Gaynor was gone. King Lear of Broda lifted his great iron sword. A sheet of flaming arrows suddenly leapt from behind his horsemen. The arrows whistled over the walls of Holweig, setting light to shrubs which had dried from lack of watering. But King Onald had prepared for this, and for some days the citizens had been preserving their urine to throw upon the flames. King Onald had heard of the fate of other besieged cities in his kingdom, and he had learned what was necessary. Several of the defenders staggered about on the walls, beating at the flaming arrows which had stuck in them. One man ran by Coram with his face burning, but Coram hardly noticed him. The barbarians rode right up to the walls and began to scale them.
The attack on Holweig has begun in earnest.
But where are the army of the dog and the army of the bear? They seem to be held in reserve, though I cannot quite see why. When will they be brought against us?
Now his attention was forced back to the immediate threat, as a barbarian, torch in one hand, sword in his teeth, hauled himself over the battlements. To the barbarian's surprise, Coram cut him down. But others were coming now. All through that morning, Coram fought mechanically, though he fought well. Elsewhere on the walls, Ralina, Jari, and Beldon were commanding detachments of defenders. 1,000 barbarians died, but 1,000 more replaced them, for Lear had had the sense at least to rest his men and bring them up in waves. There was no chance of such strategy amongst those who manned the walls. Every warrior who could carry a sword was being used. Coram must have taken a score of lives, yet he was hardly aware of it. His mail was torn in 12 places. He was bleeding from several minor wounds, but he did not notice that either. More flame arrows crossed the walls, and the women and children came with buckets to douse the fires that started. Behind the defenders was a thin haze of smoke. Before them was a mass of stinking barbarian warriors, and everywhere was the hysteria of battle. Blood splashed all surfaces. Human guts smeared the walls. Broken weapons littered the ground, and corpses were piled several deep on the battlements in a vain attempt to raise the walls and stem the attack. Below them, at the gates, barbarians used tree trunks to try to split the iron-shod wood, but so far they had held. Coram, only distantly aware of the noise and the sights of battle, knew that his fight with Prince Gaynor had been worthwhile. There was no doubt that Gaynor's hell creatures and Gaynor's tactics would have taken the city by now.
But how much time is there? When will Arkin return with the substances needed by Prince Yurit? And does the city and the pyramid still stand?
Coram smiled grimly then. Shambarg would know by now that he had slain her servant, Prince Gaynor. Her anger would be that much greater, her sense of impotence the stronger.
Perhaps this might lessen the fury of her attack upon Gulas Gorguris. Or will it, perhaps, strengthen it?
Coram strove to banish the speculations from his mind. There was no use in them. He picked up a spear, hurled by a barbarian, and flung it back, so that it pierced the stomach of a Mabden attacker, who clutched the shaft and swayed on the wall for a moment, before toppling head over heels to join the other corpses on the ground below. Then, soon after noon, the barbarians began to retreat, dragging their dead with them. Coram saw King Lear and King Cronachin conferring.
Perhaps they are wondering whether to bring up the army of the dog and the army of the bear. Or do they consider new strategy, which would not waste so many of their men? Perhaps they do not care about the men they waste.
Prince Coram!
Beldon, what is wrong? Why have you left your detachment?
Nothing is wrong. I have a message. Will you join Alarion at the temple?
On aching legs, Coram left the battlements. On the chaotic street, he found an empty chariot and leapt in. Coram drove the chariot slowly through the streets to the temple, around corpses, fires, abandoned carts, soldiers resting, and wounded who lay where they fell. As he approached the temple, Coram could see that it was packed with wounded, both within and without. Alarion stood waiting at the entrance.
Is Ark in return, Alarion?
He is, Prince. Be careful as you enter.
All these wounded.
They are dying. They are hardly aware of anything. There is no need for discretion with these poor lads.
Arkin stepped again from the shadows. For all that he was a god, and the form he assumed was not his true form, he looked tired. He handed Coram a small box of plain, dull metal.
Do not open it, for the substances are very powerful and their radiance can kill you. Take it to the messenger from Gulas Koguris and tell him to go back through the wall between the realms in his skyship.
But Lord Arkin, he has not the power to return.
I will manufacture an opening for him. Or at least, I hope I will, for I am close to exhaustion. Shombarg is working against me in subtle ways. I am not sure I will be able to find an opening near to his city, but I will try. If it is far from his city, he may be in danger trying to get back there. But it will be the best I can do.
Let us pray that Gulas Koguris still stands.
Do not pray to me, then, for I know no better than you.
Coram hurried from the temple with the box under his arm. It was heavy, and it throbbed. He raced through the clogged, miserable avenues as best he could. Every second now seemed like years, until he came at last to King Onald's palace. Just as earlier he had barely been aware of the battle, he was barely now conscious of the soldiers and wounded he passed. Through the main hall of the palace he tore, and up the steps he rushed, until he came to the roof, where the skyship awaited them.
Is it true? Did Lord Arkin return? Was he able to find the substances?
Yes, here. Do not open it, for Lord Arkin said that the substances are powerful and their radiance could kill you.
Yeah, there's a locker in the wheelhouse. I will start there.
Lord Arkin is going to try to open an entrance in the wall between the realms for you, and I hope he can do it. He is exhausted, and Queen Schomberg's power is constantly working against him. But you must be ready.
And if he's not able to create an opening?
I do not know.
What is that?
I believe it is Lord Arkin succeeding. Farewell, Gwyneth the Horn. May you find your city in the pyramid, and may you bring it back to this realm in time.
Gwyneth saluted him as he took the ship into the air. Suddenly, a ragged gap appeared in the sky. The opening was unstable. It quivered and it sparked. Beyond it, a vivid golden sky could be seen, scarred with purple and orange light, which shouted. Through the gap went the skyship. It was swallowed suddenly, and the gap shrank behind it until there was no gap there at all. Coram stood watching the sky for a moment.
A new attack must be beginning.
He ran down the steps and back through the palace. And then he saw the women. They were on their knees. They were weeping. A board was being borne on the shoulders of four tall warriors. On the board was something covered by a cloak.
Prince Coram!
Baeldin, what is it? Who is dead?
Coram. They have slain King Onald. And they have sent the armies of the Dog and the Horned Bear against us.
That was what they waited for.
Destruction comes to Hallweg, Prince Coram. Now nothing can stop it.
We'll see. Stay here. They will need someone who is not utterly undone by grief.
Savagely, Coram whipped the horses back through the streets to the wall. A silence had fallen upon the citizens of Hallweg Nanvaka, and now it seemed they waited passively for the death which the victorious barbarians would bring them. Already two women had committed suicide as he passed, hurling themselves from the roofs of their houses.
Perhaps they were wise.
He ran up the steps to the wall, where Arlena and Jaria Conal stood together.
Coram.
But they did not need to tell him, for he could see what was coming. The great dogs, eyes glaring, tongues lolling, were loping swiftly towards the city, towering over the barbarians who ran beside them. And behind the dogs came the gigantic bears, with their clubs and their shields, and with black horns curling from their heads, lumbering on their hind legs.
The dogs could leap these walls.
And the bears can most likely batter down the gates with their clubs.
Coram's single eye burned black and gold. He had reached a decision.
To the palace! All warriors, to the palace! All civilians, find what cover they can!
You are abandoning the citizens?
I am doing what I can for them, Erlina, hoping that our retreat will bring us a little time. From the palace, we shall be able to defend ourselves better. Hurry! Hurry!
Some of the warriors moved swiftly, in relief, but others were reluctant. Coram stayed on the walls, watching as the soldiers straggled back towards the distant palace, herding the citizens with them, carrying the wounded. Soon, only he, Ralina, and Jari remained on the walls, watching the dogs lope nearer, watching the bears come closer. The three companions descended to the streets and began to run through the ruined, deserted avenues, past burned bushes and crushed flowers and corpses, until they arrived at the palace.
Hurry, Coram!
Beldin, as soon as they get inside, barricade all the windows and doors.
It is already underway, sir.
A kind of peace fell over the waiting palace as the three companions climbed to the roof and stood watching. Coram and Ralina stood side by side. She clung to his arm.
How long? How long, Coram, before they come?
The beasts. Some minutes before they reach the walls.
And then?
A few more minutes while they nose about for a trap.
And then?
A minute or two before they attack the palace. And then? I do not know. We cannot stand for long against such powerful foes.
Have you no other plan?
I have one more plan, but against so many, I am not sure. I simply do not know the power.
The dogs and bears have reached the city wall.
Coram arranged his torn scarlet robe about his shoulders, then took Ralina in his arms.
Farewell, my Margravine.
Farewell? What?
And farewell, Jari, companion to champions. I think you may have to find another hero to befriend.
Do you want me with you?
No.
The first of the huge dogs leapt the wall and stood panting in the street, sniffing this way and that. They saw it in the distance.
Coram!
Coram left them as they watched, going back down the steps within the palace. Coram walked out, down the broad path, past the gates of the palace, until he stood in the main avenue, looking towards the walls. Some bushes were burning nearby. Gardens and lawns were littered with the dead and the near-dead. A small winged cat circled over Coram's head and then flew back towards the battlements. More dogs had leapt the walls and, heads down, eyes wary, came slowly along the avenue to where the single small figure of Coram waited for them. Behind the dogs, the main gates of the city were forced down. The first of the horned bears waddled through, nostrils dilating, club ready. On the roof of the barricaded palace, Ralina and Jari O'Connell stood alone and watched as Coram raised his hand to his jeweled eye. He was seen to blanch and stagger slightly. He was seen to stretch out his sorcerous hand of Queel, and it vanished, so that it seemed he had only a stump on his wrist. And then, all around him, the frightful beasts suddenly appeared. Ghastly, ruined, misshapen things. The things which had been the followers of Prince Gaynor the Damned, and were now loyal to Coram, only because he promised them release if they would find new victims to imprison in the cavern of Limbo. Ralina turned her horrified gaze to Jari, who viewed the scene with a certain equanimity.
How can such maimed things hope to beat those dogs and those bears and the thousands of barbarians who follow behind them?
I do not know. I think Coram is testing their power. If they are beaten completely, then it means that the Hand of Queel and the Eye of Rune are all but useless to him, and will not be able to save us if we try to escape.
And that is what he knew and did not speak of.
The creatures of chaos began to race up the avenue towards the gigantic dogs and bears. The animals were puzzled, but not sure whether these were friends or foes. Scampering, malformed things they were, many with limbs missing, many with huge gaping wounds, some with no heads, some with no legs at all, so that they clung to their fellows or, where they could, propelled themselves on their hands. A wretched mob, but with one advantage. They were already dead. Down the long, desolated avenue they poured. The dogs warned the creatures to go back, but the creatures came on. They could not stop. To slay the army of the dog and the army of the bear was to assure their release from terrifying limbo, to assure that their souls might die completely, and true death was all they sought now. Coram remained where he was at the end of the avenue, and he could not believe that such wounded creatures could possibly overcome the fierce and agile beasts. He saw that all the bears had entered the gates and that the barbarians were crowding in behind them, led by King Lear and King Kronikin.
Even if these chaos things are not successful, perhaps a part of an hour might be granted Halvig before the attack on the palace begins.
He looked back behind the palace to where the roof of the Temple of Law could just be seen.
Is Arkan even there? Is he waiting to see what will happen?
The dogs began to snap at the first of the chaos creatures to reach them. One of the huge beasts flung its head back with an armless, struggling, living dead thing in its jaws. It shook it and flung it aside. But it began to crawl towards the dog again the moment it had fallen. The dog flattened its ears and its tail drooped when it saw this.
Large as they are, fierce as they are still dogs. Good.
The bears moved forward, red mouths glistening with white fangs, clubs and shields raised, striking about them with their bludgeons so that chaos creatures were flung in all directions. But the creatures did not die. They picked themselves up and they attacked again. Chaos creatures clung to the fur of the dogs and the bears. One dog went down at last, thrashing on its back as Coram's maimed corpses tore out its throat. Coram smiled an unpleasant smile.
Forward!
But now he saw that what he feared might happen was happening. Lear Ap Roda was leading his riders around the fighting beasts. They moved warily, but they were beginning to feel the approach to the long avenue. Coram turned and ran back towards the palace. The palace door would only open a crack because of the barricade. But Coram managed to squeeze through.
Ready, men!
Beldin, it is Prince Coram!
Coram!
But Lear's army is approaching. I need to get to the roof. It's quite well built.
We will attempt to refortify it. How long do we have?
Not long.
Before he had reached the roof, the barbarians were pouring down the avenue towards the palace, while behind them the army of the dog and the army of the bear still struggled with the living dead chaos creatures. As Coram ran out onto the roof to join Ralina and Jari, arrows whirred from the windows of the palace.
King Kronikin has fallen, Coram. The archers have hit him.
With an arrow in each eye. King Lear seems to be better armored than his brother monarch, however. The arrows merely bounce off his helmet and breastplate.
Below, Lear Ap Roda waved his sword in mockery of the archers and flung his barbarians against the palace.
They have begun to batter the palace doors. Once they do, it will not be long before they batter down the barricades.
Beldin!
We can hold the lower floors a few moments longer, Prince Coram, but that is all.
Retreat as slowly as you can. We'll join you soon.
Aye.
What did you think would happen down there, Coram?
I have a feeling that Schoenbarg is exerting great pressures on this realm since I destroyed Prince Gaynor. I thought she might have the power to turn those things upon me.
But she cannot personally come to this realm. We were told that. It would be to sin against the rule of balance, and even the great old gods will not defy the cosmic balance so openly.
Perhaps. But I am beginning to suspect that Schoenbarg's fury is so great she may attempt to break through into this realm.
That will mean the end of us without doubt. What is Arkan doing?
Engaging himself with what he can. He cannot interfere directly in our aid, and I suspect that he, too, prepares himself for Schoenbarg. Come, we had best join the defenders.
They were two flights down when they saw the retreating warriors vainly trying to force back the roaring barbarians who pressed blindly upwards, careless of the threat of death. Beldin ran back up to meet Coram and spread his hands hopelessly.
There are more detachments elsewhere in the palace, but I fear they're as hard-pressed as we.
Coram looked down the steps, which were crowded with the invaders.
The wall of guards is thin and will soon break.
Then we must go to the roof. At least we will be able to hold them there a little longer. We must conserve our forces as best we can.
But we are defeated. Are we not, Prince Coram?
I fear so, Belden. I fear so.
Rallina covered her face with her hands.
It is Schomberg's voice, Coram.
Coram's mouth was dry. He could not answer her.
What is that?
The roof! Quickly!
As soon as they reached the roof, they flung up their arms to protect their eyes against the powerful lights which swam in the sky and obscured the sun. Coram saw it first. Schomberg's face contorted with insensate fury, huge upon the horizon, her auburn hair flowing as clouds might flow across the sky, a mighty sword in her hand, large enough to slice the whole world in twain.
It is she, the Queen of the Swords. She has defied the balance and she has come to destroy us.
Look there. That is why she is here. She has followed them to our realm. They have escaped her. All her plans were thwarted, and she defied the balance in her impotence and her rage.
The city and the pyramid!
It was. Gulas Korguris hovered in the sky over battered Holweg Nonvaka, its green light flickering and threatening to fade, and then bursting into increased brilliance.
That was the sound we heard. The city and the pyramid returning to our realm.
Something left the city and flew down towards the palace. Coram turned away from the image of Schomberg's raging face and her waving sword and watched the skyship descend to the roof. In it was the King Without a Country. He held something in his arms.
King Norik Dan!
My Lady Rallina and Prince Coram, a gift for you in return for your help to Gulas Korguris.
I thank you, but this is no time.
The gift has powers. It is a weapon. Take it.
It was a cylinder covered in peculiar designs and with a spade grip at one end. The other end tapered.
It is a weapon. It will destroy those at whom you point it.
Coram looked at the vision of Schomberg and saw her raise her sword. He pointed the cylinder at her.
No, not Schomberg, for she is a great old god, a sword ruler. Your mortal enemies.
Coram rushed toward the tower, but King Lear, leading the barbarians up the stairwell, had finally reached the last flight.
Point it and press the handle!
Coram pointed the weapon at King Lear of Broda. The tall king was striding out onto the roof, his braided beard fluttering, his bearing triumphant, and all his huge grim guard behind him in the stairwell.
Do you wish to surrender, last of the Vardha?
I am not the last of the Vardar, King Lear of Broda, as this shows you.
He pressed the grip. And suddenly the king clutched at his chest and fell backwards into the arms of his guard, his tongue protruding from his lips, his gray braids falling over his eyes.
He is dead. A king! Vengeance!
Waving his sword, he rushed at Coram, but again Coram depressed the grip. And he too died in the manner of his king. Coram pointed the weapon several times. Each time a grim guard fell, until there were no more grim guards living. Coram looked back at the King Without a Country. Norik Dan was smiling.
We use such things against Schomberg's minions. That is one of the reasons why she expressed such rage. It will take her time to create new mortal things to do her work.
But she has defied the balance in one respect. She may defy it in another.
The monstrous, beautiful, furious face of the Queen of the Swords rose higher over the horizon, and now her shoulders could be seen, her breasts, her waist.
Ah, Coram, dreadful assassin of all I love!
Coram's ears throbbed with pain. He staggered backwards against the battlements, watching, transfixed, as the great sword filled the sky and Schomberg's eyes blazed like two mighty suns. She was engulfing the world with her presence. The godly sword began to fall, and Coram readied himself for death.
Coram!
Rallina rushed to his arms.
You have mocked the ruling of the cosmic balance, Sister Schomberg.
Against the far horizon stood Arkin, as gigantic as the Queen of the Swords. Lord Arkan of Law, in all his godly finery, with a sword in his hand as large as Schomburg's.
You have mocked the balance, Queen of the Swords.
I am not the first.
There is only one who has survived, and he is the Nameless Force. You have relinquished your right to rule your realm.
No! The balance has no power over me.
But it has.
And the cosmic balance that Coram had seen once before in a vision after he had banished Arioch of Chaos appeared in the sky between Lord Arkan and Queen Schomburg, and it was so great that it dwarfed them.
It has.
The balance began to tip towards Arkan.
It has.
Queen Schomburg's scream shook the whole world, and it threatened to send it spinning from its course about the sun.
It has.
No!
The sword that was the symbol of her power was wrenched effortlessly from her hand and appeared for an instant in the bowl of the balance, which tilted towards Lord Arkan.
No! It was a trick! Arkan planned this. He lured me here. He knew! He knew! He knew! He knew! He knew!
And the substance of Queen Schomburg began to disperse. It drifted away like wisps of cloud, and then was gone. For a moment, the cosmic balance remained framed in the sky. Then that, too, disappeared. Only Lord Arkan remained now, all clothed in white radiance, his white sword in his hand.
It is done.
It seemed that warmth flooded through all the world.
It is done.
Lord Arkan! Did you know that Schomburg's fury would be so great that you would risk the wrath of the balance and enter this realm?
I hoped it. I merely hoped it.
Then much of what you have asked me to do was with this in mind.
Aye.
Coram thought of all the bitterness he had experienced, all the strife. He thought of Prince Gaynor's thousands of faces flickering before him.
I could come to hate all gods.
It would be your right. We must use mortals for ends we cannot ourselves achieve.
And then, Lord Arkan had vanished also. Now, all that was left were the circling skyships of Gulas Corguris, sending down death to the terrified barbarians who were scattering now all over the churned lawns, avenues, and gardens of Hallweeg Non Vaka. Beyond the walls, a few barbarians were fleeing, but the skyships found them. The skyships found them all. Coram noted that the army of the dog and the army of the bear had gone, as had the creatures of chaos he had summoned to his aid.
Have they been recalled by their masters, the dog and the horned bear? Or are they now occupying the cavern of Limbo?
Coram put a finger to his jeweled eye patch, but then dropped it. He could not bear, for a long time, to look upon that netherworld. The king without a country came forward.
You see how useful the gift was, Prince Coram.
Aye.
And now Schomburg is banished from her realm. Only one more realm has a sword ruler. Mabaloda must fear us now.
I am sure that he does.
And I am no longer a king without a country. I can begin to rebuild my kingdom once I have returned to my own plane.
That is good.
Coram looked down at the corpse-strewn city. A few of the citizens were beginning to emerge from their houses. Ralina stroked his haggard face. Jaria Conal stroked the chin of his winged cat, which sat again upon his shoulder.
The power of the Mabdan barbarians has ended forever, my champion. Peace has come to Arkan's realm, and peace, no doubt, will come to the realm that Schomburg formerly ruled, which now, I suppose, is to be ruled by Arkan's brother, Lord of Law.
Shall we return to Moidal in the Sea, Coram?
I doubt if it exists. Glandith would have raised it.
And what of Earl Glandith? Where is he? What became of him?
I do not think he is dead. I think I shall encounter him again. I have served Law and performed all the deeds Arkan asked of me. But I have still to take my vengeance.
In the prow of this newest airship stood the old, handsome Varrak Prince Yoret, smiling. Far out across the plain, the city in the pyramid was beginning to descend to Earth,
Corum! Will you guest with us at Gulas Gorgoris? I wish to speak with you on matters concerning the restoration of Vardak lands, of Vardak castles, so that your land may once again be called Broan Vardak. We will send the remaining Mabden back to their original kingdom of Broan Mabden, and the pleasant forests and fields will bloom again.
And at last, Corum's gaunt face softened, and he smiled.
I thank you, Prince Yirrit. We shall be honored to guest with you.
Now that we have returned to our own realm, I think we shall cease our venturings for a while.
And I hope that I, too, may cease my own venturings. A little tranquility would be welcome.
Glandatha Krai was weary, as were his men, the charioteers who massed behind him. From the cover of the hill, he had witnessed the confrontation between Queen Siombag and Lord Arkin, and he had seen the sudden defeat of the Mabden Horde and its allies.
It is I who am the outlaw now. It is I who must hide and scheme and no fear. For the Vardak have returned, and law rules all.
At last, as night began to fall, and the world was illuminated by the strange green glow from the monstrous sorceress city, Glandith turned to his men with orders and a vow.
Go back along the roads you traveled. Go back to the sea and into the dark forest of the northeast. I will yet find an ally strong enough to destroy Corum and all that Corum loves. And I believe I know who to summon. I believe I know.
Corum, the Queen of the Swords, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 1971, Michael and Linda Moorcock. All rights reserved. Recorded with permission of the author. Production copyright 2016, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Performed by Nanette Savard, Chris Gennebach as Corum, Bradley Smith as Jari, Tracy Oliveira as Ralina, James Konacek as Norigdan, with Lawrence Redmond, Thomas Keegan, Evan Casey, Matthew Keenan, Bob Payne, Colleen Delaney, Todd Schofield, Terrence Asaford, Patrick Bussing, Dylan Lynch, Gregory Linnington, Scott McCormick, and Richard Rowan. Directed by Nanette Savard. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Patrick Stratton. Corum theme music by Peter Pavley. Additional original music by Peter Pavley. Adapted for graphic audio by Yasmin Toison. Produced by Rick Rowan and Wayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Corum, the Queen of the Swords, be sure to look for Chris and Karen Rowan's Playing Gods, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for? Go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can select from over 900 titles and 60 series in either CD or high-quality download formats. If you would like to listen to an entire series, you can conveniently purchase the whole sets on CD or USB flash drive from graphicaudio.net. At graphicaudio.net, you can now earn loyalty rewards points, redeemable toward future online purchases. You can also get full mobile downloads directly to your phone or tablet with our new Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices, so you can listen on the go, anytime, anywhere. Call 1-800-670-5220. or visit www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our email newsletter, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter.